Good evening. Thank you for attending. First order of business is to call the meeting to order. I would like to call the meeting to order on May 9th, 2023, special session of the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board meeting. If you wish to address the board on any item on this agenda, please complete a blue card speaker card located on the agenda table at the side of the room. Please indicate on the speaker card which item number and topic you wish to speak on. If you wish to speak during call to audience, please specify that you wish to what you wish to discuss when completing the blue speaker card. Once completed, please hand it to the recording secretary, which is Casey. And as the agenda item comes up, you may stand at this point and have 3 minutes to speak in a courteous and respectful manner to those present. So first order is Casey will take roll call.
Here. Board Member Landau.
Here.
Board Member Moothart.
Here.
Board Member Saleta.
Here.
Board Member Varys.
Here.
Chair Wood.
Here. Thank you. So next up is call to audience. Do we have any blue cards for call to audience, which is on any topic not on the agenda?
Yes, we do.
Seeing none, we'll move on. Council liaison comments. Council Member Joyce Jones Ivy, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. As you all know, we do have a new town manager. His name is Jeff Wilkins, and we're expecting him to be on the job here in Oral Valley July 7th. So please take an opportunity to welcome him. You can send him emails through our town website. Also, you know, council is in the middle of taking a look at our FY23-24 budget. There will be study sessions 5:10 and 5:11 here in council chambers. We're going to have public hearings June 7th and the 21st so that you have an opportunity to give your input on that. As of May 5th, we now have our short-term rental ordinance that's in effect. So if you are aware of anyone that has a short-term rental or anyone that's interested in registering, and they do have to be registered now, as of February, that's when council passed this ordinance. We gave owners a 90-day grace period, so now you have to register. So if they'll go to our website, they can get the information that's necessary to register their properties. They can also call our Economic Development Department at 520-229-4800 and also get that information. I wanted to share with you that at our last council meeting, we did adopt a policy for every school that is in Oral Valley or plans to come to Oral Valley that they have an emergency plan specifically targeting active shooters, but also emergency plans addressing lockdown evacuation routes. These plans will be reviewed by our chief of police along with the town's emergency response planner, and we have asked that their plans be reviewed annually to make sure that whatever additional security input or modifications need to be made, they can get that recommendation. We're continuing to visit our businesses here in Oral Valley with our Economic and Development staff, particularly Margie Adler, and along with President of our chamber, Kristen Sharp. We're getting a very, very good response as we go out to visit our businesses. They're very, very responsive to us and are very appreciative of the fact that we are concerned about their welfare in our community. And this brings me to a reminder, please vote, shop. But eat, shop, Oral Valley. We need to help maintain our businesses here. And also be reminded that sales tax is what subsidizes our community, and we definitely need you all to participate in that project. My last announcement is for Project Grad. We need your help. We have about 50% fewer volunteers this year than we've had in previous years, and they are desperately in need of volunteers to help with setup, event night, breakdown on Wednesday and Saturday. So if you have any time at all, please go to the website. It is cdo.pg for Project Grad. volunteer@gmail.com. Our next council meeting is the 24th right here in council chambers, and all of our meetings are open to you. I strongly encourage you to come. Again, give us the input that we need so that we know that we are doing the things that you desire us to do here in Oral Valley. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is the special session agenda. Special session agenda item one is a presentation, discussion, and possible action to recommend council approval of the Vistosa Trails Nature Preserve Master Plan. And Christy, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. It's habit. My apologies, Board. So, 2 years and 2 months ago, the former golf course owner, Rompsman, submitted a general plan amendment to rezone the 206 acres with the goal of constructing a senior living facility, and residential. And that impact was going to be greater than 50% of the property. Well, our community said no. Absolutely not. So shortly thereafter, the Conservation Fund was engaged, came out to the site, toured the site, and agreed that the former golf course has conservation values. So over the course of 2 years, or actually a little less than 2 years, there was discussion, there was negotiation, there was fundraising, all the while we were also dealing with a global pandemic. So a Herculean lift on behalf of our community members, the Conservation Fund, and our town council resulted in July of 2022, the celebration of the acquisition of Vistosa Trails Nature Preserve. Yeah, I'm okay with that. My point in bringing this up is what it could have been, and our community said no, and now we have an opportunity to improve and invite people to our new 202-acre community asset. The conservation, when we acquired the property, did come with a conservation easement, and it is currently held by the Conservation Fund. And bear with me because I'm going to read this because there's value in these words, and that the town acquired the property from the Conservation Fund by a donation which required the town to grant this conservation easement immediately after acquiring the property. This conservation easement is granted for the following conservation purposes: preserving land areas for outdoor recreation by or the education of the general public, protecting a relatively natural habitat of fish, wildlife, or plants, or similar ecosystem, preserving open space for scenic enjoyment by the general public, and preserving historical, archaeological, or cultural aspects of real property. Those were the founding principles and are the founding principles of this easement. And I believe what we will present to you today adheres and honors these four guiding principles. Within there is an area called permitted use, the low impact recreation, and it's essentially to provide access to this community asset. And the allowable uses, as I shared with you a couple months ago, are as follows: walking, hiking, jogging, and cycling, bird watching, stargazing, nature and archaeological tours, education programs, nature photography, picnicking, on-leash dog walking. I won't repeat myself this time. On-leash dog walking. Construction of ramadas, benches, picnic tables, water stations, bird blinds, and even exercise stations. Also, construction of ADA and non-ADA trails and paths, any additional restrooms and parking areas. Again, as you will see in the presentation, the recommendations all adhere to these allowable uses. Now, this isn't an inclusive. These are generally the allowed uses. So the master plan, we acquired the property in July, went out for an RFP in August, and awarded the contract to Site Southwest in September of 2022. Through November and December, Site Southwest was on site, conducted 4 meetings. We put together a community survey, met with stakeholder individuals and groups, with town council interviews, with school leadership. Also, that when that opportunity was data gathering, base mapping, and working through some educational programming. In January of 23, Sites was back, and this time they had a picture that matched the words that they heard. And then we were back in February here, speaking to you, and then also presented to council in March. The plan that was unveiled in January, the result really was, it's just too much. It didn't really meet to the spirit of what the community wanted, was less and more. So, and really there was too many trails, too many new additional trails, too many that were close to homes, although allowable through the easement. This is something our community did not want, right? So for the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board, generally speaking, still too many trails was the consensus, too close to homes. There was concern about the pond itself and the water overall cost, the value of it in terms of a health benefit, both physical and mental health and well-being. And the town council generally, you see a theme here, right? Again, too much, too many trails, the concern about proximity to homes. There was some, concern about overall costs. At that point, we didn't have the cost, but we know that it's 202 acres. This is a long-term process. They did mention focusing on revegetation. That has apostrophe twice. Disturb undisturbed areas and just overall safety of the space, but there was an appreciation of the programming piece as we presented to council. So the plan has evolved. The education programming by the ACORN group, we didn't receive any comments, concerns, or discussion about wanting that to change. Conversely, we did hear how much they appreciated it, how much they liked it, and it was an inclusive look at the property. The new trails, as you will see, the recommendation are the only new trails will be related to ADA loops in already disturbed areas. So there's one section in the north portion that creates an access point and then down a fairway around the pond. And then the other is in the former driving range where we have the education node and creating trail systems through there, and those two will be ADA. That's the limit in terms of new additional trails. We do still have discussion about the existing path and the side of that and how those will be treated as a safety mechanism. Again, we heard a lot of comments about cyclists going too fast and needing an opportunity to step aside, let them pass, and then the pedestrian to come on, and looking primarily at some of the blind spots, those blind curves and whatnot. So again, focusing on safety. Working with the developer on a parking lot, the main trailhead, to partner with that project. And then the pond. So there was no consensus with the board or with council in terms of what to do with the pond, with the exception of we have to do something because we need to make it safe. So the recommendation is going to be to make it safe, and by knocking the slopes, the sidewalls down, it will have a gradual slope with a small water feature in there, and then revitalizing the pond. The revitalization, we do have some cost estimates, and you'll see that later. I don't know that it's revitalizing existing, or we sort of reimagine something new, but that's what the recommendation is. And then the thought is that as that, because that will need to happen one way or the other. And that if there is a desire for it to be larger in scale, then we already have a baseline. It's already lifted. We already have a circulation system in there. And then that will give us an opportunity to leverage grants and additional funding in future years. And lastly is implementation in a phased approach. Again, this is a lot of property and a lot of work for the initial investment. And then once that's done, just the general maintenance is relatively simple. But it is 202 acres. I can't state that, overstate that more. That concludes my portion. So give us a little technology switch here. And George Radnovich with Site Southwest will be up to present the plan.
Sounds good. So as Christy said, my name is George Radnovich, and we'll have technology here in a minute. I'm a principal with Site Southwest, and I've been at the meetings. You've probably seen me. Liz Cole was our project manager, and she decided to leave the firm, and so I've been here the whole time, and we'll continue on from that. I don't see the.
Technical difficulty.
Sorry. Oh, well, that's interesting. Thank you. All right. Learn something new every day. Oops. There. So I'm going to do a little presentation. Feel free to stop me at any point if there's something you want me to go over in a more complete way. We did give you a master plan document that hopefully you had time to at least peruse and read. And so that document is still in draft form. And if you choose in some way to modify what we've talked about or recommended, we're still able to do that. We think we've gotten to the point that we've listened to yourselves, as well as town council and the mayor, and the people. And a lot of them are here today, and I recognize a lot of faces. And I think everybody will like the plan at this point. So I'll do the presentation, and again, feel free to stop at any point. One thing I wanted to say is you're really doing something in Oro Valley that hasn't been done much. I mean, there's one other project in Tucson that is doing a very similar kind of thing, converting a golf course to a preserve. But most golf courses that are being converted into housing. And so it's really forward thinking of Oro Valley to do what you did, and for the people of Oro Valley to spend money, their own money, to try to make that happen. It's just an amazing thing. So these goals match the goals pretty closely that Christy mentioned. And they're really about three things. They're about protection, they're about inclusivity, and they're about kind of enhancing the site-sensitive passive recreational benefits that are already there in some places. So in terms of protection, what we're talking about is protecting the Sonoran Desert that is there now and the cultural resources. While we know at this point that the petroglyphs weren't petroglyphs in terms of ancient Hohokam artwork. The Hohokam were still in the valley, and they were still here, and so there's a connection there because these were hunting grounds for them. The educational opportunities, the inclusivity statement I made is really about creating a place that everyone from a little kid to an older person can enjoy it, learn from it, and make it a place that you can really enhance the quality of life and the educational benefits in many ways of Oro Valley and really, for that matter, Southern Arizona. And then the site-sensitive passive recreational benefits that you already have, we've been out on the site, I bet about 8 times now. And people are out there bird watching. They're out there enjoying the preserve. They're walking. They're riding their bikes. That can be a little dangerous sometimes, and I'll get into that. But just enhancing that natural environment and making it better is really where the plan is going. So the first thing I'm going to do is talk about. Something seems to be missing up on the top, but that's okay. So we had one consultant on our team to do this project, and we've worked quite a bit with Acorn Group, and they are really supreme at interpretive master planning and educational master planning. And Jenny Rigby, I hope some of you got to meet her. Hope some of you in the audience did as well. And she's really a great educator, and they did the educational and interpretive part of our plan. And so these are some of their recommendations, and they're from Southern California. And one of the things that she and Acorn described is that the educational benefits of the preserve should be authentic and relevant, and really do that in an outcome-based kind of mission. Testing the waters is something that is really about a sense of place. And so you already have that with the wonderful Sonoran Desert and the wildlife that is part of it. surrounding the preserve. And so really this is about talking about that sense of place and making it part of the educational benefits of what we do here. Embracing backward design is an interesting way to think about this. What it means is that we really want to recommend that we think about what we want to be when we grow up, in a way, what we want to be in the future. And so embracing backward design is about considering what Oro Valley wants from this preserve down the road, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road. And so phase one is kind of identifying the ideas. Phase two is identifying assessment tools to create those ideas. And then the last is determining what the resources are that you would need to implement those ideas from an education and an interpretive perspective. So Jenny went through a good programming phase for the education programs, and along with the thinking about that, she's also recommending a three on-site program process for kids, for education of kids. And two would focus on science, and the third would focus on social science. That way, all that the preserve has to offer can be discovered by children and really learn to love the preserve and respect it and treat it with dignity. The science-based part of what she's recommending is kind of about discovering the desert. When kids are small, they see the desert, but they may not know what it really has to offer. And so programs that can do that, partially through the Innovation Academy, partially through the town of Oro Valley, is one of the things that we're recommending as a team. Once the kids get into the latter stages of education, then they can kind of fine-tune observational skills that they'll learn when they're young and their sensory perceptions and get into more of the science of it. And so grades 3 through 6, we're talking about introducing technology, the technology of science, into that education program. And again, this is the town and Innovation Academy. The social science part of it, while the Hohokam didn't have a village in Oro Valley, it was very close by, as you know, and there's still something to be borrowed from that cultural past in the Tucson and Oro Valley area. And so our recommendation is that become part of the history and social science part of the education within the preserve. That will also give kids a respect for the site so that in the future they're going to know the importance of not disturbing places like this, not trashing it, and not, you know, not disturbing it in ways that are going to make it a less sensitive place, nice place to be. We're also recommending that from an interpretive perspective, best practices be used in all cases. So there be interpretive signage, interpretive media, there be staff, probably from the Parks and Recreation Department, to kind of embrace and teach what the preserve has to offer. I'm not going to go through all of these best practices. Finally, there should be a hierarchy to the education and the interpretive side of the preserve. So there should be a theme, and it's a really powerful theme, I think, that this once golf course is now a preserve. I mean, that is the big idea, that is what the preserve is in our opinion. And that theme is kind of added to and enhanced with the idea of taking back the desert that was here before the golf course was here. So that's a really strong, powerful idea. And we also talk about sub-themes here, the history that Christy just went through is a really powerful history as well, and that needs to be part of the memory of the Oro Valley, excuse me, the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve. So as part of the master plan, we spent a lot of time out in the field. Both Jenny with Acorn and Liz and myself and Susan from our company. And we did what we call an existing conditions map, and we did photo documentation of the whole preserve. And so what you see here, I'm going to move this a little bit. What you see here is, I don't know if you can see my cursor. You can. Good. What you see here is a few important features. One is the driving range, which is right in this area. And we see that, and I think all of you see that as an important part of what the preserve can be in the future. The other is the pond. And, you know, that's been a photo op and a great place for people to go in the past. We think it can still be a great place for people to go in the future. And then the trailhead and the development that will be in the future, because the developer is going to have to provide the trailhead itself and parking for people to visit and go experience the preserve. This map also shows the underpasses. You can see those in these little red kind of U-shaped features here. It shows all of the washes that go through the property. That's those blue kind of pieces there. It shows the actual outline of the legal bounds of the preserve in black, and then a number of other features. Just before we got involved with the project, the town of Oro Valley conducted an ADA existing conditions assessment. And the map on the right that you see is part of that assessment. All of those little dots show places that the existing cart path, which will end up being the trail, don't meet ADA. And with every project that is either open space or park related, we have to meet ADA. There's no question about that. So this is just a very graphic way to show that there really isn't a part of the cart path that is usable to someone that has accessibility challenges and that kind of thing. And we heard from people in the public meetings about that, that they wanted a place to come within the preserve too. As you know, the existing cart path is 8 feet wide, and there are places where it's kind of open around it, but there are other places where it's really constricted, and there are cactus and acacias and Palo Verdes and mesquites just right up next to it. And so it needs to be accessible at some level, and we've got some ideas for that as well. So this is the preferred master plan. And I'm going to go through the whole thing, and I'm just going to go through kind of major points about the master plan that we heard from you and from the community. One was that there were just too many trails on the plan from the beginning, and we reduced it down at the last meeting that we came to with you. We reduced it down again between that meeting and now. And there's only, as Christy said, two areas that we're recommending in addition to the cart path. Can you touch screen? Oh, nice. And how do you erase it?
Justin will clear it.
Oh, I see. Oh, perfect. Thanks, Christy. Thanks, Justin. So the orange or amber color trail is the existing cart path. We are recommending some upgrades to that. As you know, if you've walked it, there's a lot of washes that have had their way with it. It's eroded, it's undercut in places. Those need to be fixed. The only two places that we're adding trail at this point is right here at the old driving range, and you can see that blue dashed line that goes right through the driving range there. And the other is up here where the former pond was. And we have ADA parking at the former pond, we're recommending, and we have ADA parking up here on Rancho Vistoso Drive, because it's not that far, and we thought the walk back and forth from that parking lot would be good for some people, and then a shorter walk around the pond would be good for others. And Justin, if you could take those off. The rest of this I'll explain. The kind of olive green colors are existing Sonoran desert that is in pretty good shape. We did a map mapped that out, and it's really a nice example of Sonoran ecosystem. The light green area, the mint green areas, are the old fairways, the old tees, and the old greens. And what we're suggesting for those is the reclamation and revegetation of those. And I'll explain that a little further. The light tan areas, like this right here, and you see them where the pond is and there, and there's quite a few other places where they kind of pop up. And those are, and especially around here in the driving range area, those are disturbed areas. Those are areas that really need to be revegetated and reclaimed. And so that's what we're highlighting with those. If we can take that off of there, that'd be great. The sand traps are also shown on the site, and they're shown right there. You can see them where the old sand traps are here, just throughout the whole facility. And we're not recommending getting rid of those. Those are spaces that can collect water. Some of them we're recommending wildlife drinkers in, and some of those we're recommending educational facilities in. One thing I didn't mention in the interpretive work that I talked about is right down here. It's right across the street from Innovation Academy, and one of our recommendations in the interpretive and education piece of the master plan is to create a kind of faux archaeological site. And they've done this in a few parts of the country, but this is using the sand trap to bury, quote unquote, archaeological treasures that kids can then find. And they'd be stationary within the sand trap so that they couldn't get stolen, and they'd be made out of concrete or a hard clay, something like that. But they could find arrowheads and pottery shards and things like that that are relative to the Hohokam and their past here. So I wanted to mention that. Another thing that you're probably aware of is all of the restrooms on the preserve have now been completely refurbished, and they will be open for visitors' use. We're recommending four parking lots and then a fifth that will be in association with Innovation Academy. And the parking lots are here, up on Rancho Vistoso, here on Pebble Creek, near the old maintenance facility, here up on Vistoso Highlands Drive, and a small one right here at the pond. And that is just four spaces, and it's purely ADA. There's no other spaces there, and it's a kind of pullout from the... Yes?
Just a quick question. What's the total capacity of all these parking
places? Oh, I don't have that number. We do have the number in the master plan. I would say the total capacity, we don't know what the developer is going to build. He showed a space for a parking lot. It's probably going to be in the range of 30, 40, something like that. The parking lot at the pond would be, as I said, four, maybe five at most. The parking lot at the former maintenance yard, not many, probably something like eight, maybe 10. And then we're thinking just a few over on Rancho de Vistoso Drive, maybe five at most. So pretty small parking lots for the most part.
And the other one?
I think that was all of them. Oh, the one off of Vistoso Highlands? That's the one that I mentioned that the developer is going to build, and that could be in the range of 30 or 40, but he hasn't submitted plans that I've seen yet, And so we really don't know at this point. But it'll be part of that development. It's not going to be actually a part of the preserve. He's being asked to build that. The other black boxes you see on the map are shade structures. Here, 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 and here. Some of those shade structures, especially around the pond, and I'll show you a close-up of that, will be blinds for bird watching or other wildlife watching. Let's see if I missed anything. The outdoor classrooms are all part of the Innovation Academy. And we're working out. We've talked to Innovation Academy, their principal, on a couple of occasions. And we don't have a number for that for those spaces, but they will be off the preserve. They'll be on the other side of Desert Fairways Drive within the Innovation Academy. And they'll only be usable after school hours and on weekends. Let's see. I talked about wildlife drinkers. I think I talked about all of that. Let me go to the next slide, which is a blow up. Oh, no, sorry. We're recommending, the top section that you see right here is the existing condition, the 8-foot wide cart path. While we were out on the preserve, a number of times there were, I won't call them almost collisions, but the bicyclists that ride on the paths and walkers, people that are hiking or walking on the path, don't really bend or don't really work too well together. Our view of a mixed use trail, for instance, in most circumstances would be a 12-foot wide trail that would include bicyclists, skaters, scooters, walkers, runners. We don't have that. So one of our options still that's with us is that bottom section right here. And what we're recommending is that we add some crushed gravel, walkable crushed gravel on either side of the trail so that if a bicyclist and a walker, a pedestrian, meet, there's a place for the pedestrian to go. That's a safe respite from any kind of collision or issue that might occur there. It's really not quite big enough a cart path to handle too many multimodal transportation types. So that's something that we'd like to get your opinion on tonight because we'd like to make it final. And of course, the community's opinion as well. Okay, great. So this is the blow up, and this has changed since the last time you saw it. This is the blow up of the driving range node. You can see that we've added the ADA trail, which is right here. There's a small trail also here, which we moved from this area because there's the potential for cultural artifacts in that area. So this area we did not want to recommend any kind of building in. If we could take those off, that'd be great, Justin. we don't have a parking lot. We showed a kind of a place that the developer will be building that parking lot and trailhead. It makes connections to the trails. All of the trails that are shown here are either existing trails our existing trails, except for, and if we could remove the circle again, except for this small one right here, which is where we moved the science trail that was over in this area. We still have the demonstration garden right here, which would be a demonstration for pollinator plants, educational signage, wildlife drinkers, an outdoor classroom right next to it. I'll show that in a second, and water harvesting. This is the outdoor classroom right here, and it would be a small classroom like you might see in a state park or a national park, just a very small place that someone could talk about nature, talk about water, talk about wildlife, native plants, you name it. We haven't specifically shown anywhere for night sky viewing. There were quite a few people upset about that. You may remember we had a night sky viewing area right here, and we just removed that. And while people could go out there and see the stars, and they're beautiful, as you know, we're not recommending any kind of star area at this point that someone could go to and have a what's called a star party, which is a place that people can go and have astronomers guide them through the stars. We kept the demonstration gardens in this area, and they're pretty far from all of the residents. I did want to mention that none of the trails, except the existing cart path, are closer than about two-thirds of a football field to the nearest residents. So we were very conscious of where we placed the alignments for that, because we heard people did not want trails coming up close and personal to their properties. So the cart path still is, but we can't move that, and we'll improve it. We can improve it through recommended plantings so that it can be screened from backyards, and that's easily done in most cases. The three gardens that we're showing here are demonstrating the three ecotones in this part of Arizona, and they would be the low desert zone, the grassland zone, and then the hillside zone, which is up against the mountains, and they would be demonstrations of that kind of habitat, those kind of native plants. We're also recommending an Akchin, which is an old Hohokam water harvesting garden, a waffle garden in effect, that is actually in a low point in the driving range. And so all of the water from this area, and from this area drains into that. So it would be pretty easy to have that actually be a working kind of farm, if you will, with just the three sisters, beans, squash, and corn. I think I covered everything. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see. So this was the preferred option that we heard from council, from the public, and from you the last time we were here. And this is the smallest pond location, the smallest pond footprint that we're recommending right now. And that's this pond right here. And that is at the base of the waterfall, so the waterfall could still be used as a way to feed that pond. It could potentially use reclaimed water. We're also recommending two smaller wildlife ponds here and here, and then a trail all the way around the footprint for the pond, which is this right here. We've taken out the grassy area. A lot of people didn't like that. Some did, I know. And we've taken out, because there were some folks kind of thinking that it was just too close to their homes over in this area. So we haven't included any kind of picnicking or anything like that in this pond plan. There would be some wildlife drinkers around it. We've also shown some here, some viewing blinds. Because there'll be water in it with this particular option, there will be wildlife, as you know. They'll come. And so we're recommending also that the embankment on the pond be removed and then sloughed down towards the center of the pond footprint. It's a danger right now. It drops about 8 feet or so. And it's concrete. It shouldn't be there in the first place. So we're recommending taking all of that out and then sloughing the edge of the pond in towards the center like that. And so harvesting the water that falls there would be part of the arrangement. We've actually talked to the city engineer, and we'll retain all of the water that falls there within the pond. That's the way it was before, and none of the water can be released into the wash that goes right by it. And the wash is shown in blue right here. And I think that's everything. Oh, one other thing I was going to mention. Again, if someone, and here's the ADA parking lot right down here. If someone did want to take a little extended walk, not just a walk around the pond, we're showing an ADA path on this part of the cart path that would then go over towards the parking lot. And potentially it could go and loop that way, but we didn't show that. Yes.
Can you address in more specific terms the viewing blinds?
Sure. This, let me, I don't think I can blow this up at this point. The viewing blinds are, we're suggesting this kind of structure right here. They would be around the pond area or other wildlife habitat areas. They would be small. Viewing blinds really don't work if you let more than 2 to 4 people in them. So they would be a small shade structure that has screening on the sides so that wildlife wouldn't see someone inside it. They might have a cover to make it comfortable in the summertime. We're showing a wood wildlife viewing blind. That's just our kind of artistic sense coming out. It doesn't necessarily need to look like what we're showing there. Typically, they would have viewing ports at various levels for taller people and for kids. Often we'll put benches inside viewing blinds. Nothing electronic or anything like that, typically. No lighting or anything like that. And they'd be obscured as much as possible by plantings around them and reclaimed. We're showing it wood, but it can be anything. We've done blinds for... I've seen blinds for wildlife preserves using metal, rubberized metal, wood. There's any number of materials that could be used. Did that give enough detail, board member? Thank you. The shade structure we're showing in this area right here is a little close-up. We've used this a couple of times on projects, and what we're showing is a butterfly shade structure that would collect water, harvest it, and then try to reclaim and water some of the native plants around it. So it's kind of a water harvesting feature. We've designed those before, and they work pretty well. The ponds themselves would probably have a bentonite liner so that they do breathe a little bit and also release some water a little bit, and that would help support the landscape around it. They wouldn't be too deep. They'd probably be in the range of, 1 foot to maybe 3 feet. We have, on other projects we've worked on, one is a national wildlife preserve in New Mexico. They actually regulate the pond based on the migrating wildfowl, and they'll lower it for species that like to have their feet in the mud, and then raise the water level for species that like to be in water. So they could be something that has a manageable water level on them that could help to attract wildlife at different parts, different times of the year during migrations for various fowl and avian wildlife. I think that's everything for this. The revegetation. As you know, Bermuda grass is pretty darn persistent. It's hard to get rid of. I believe the town has sprayed all of the greens, tees, and fairways with glyphosate in the past. to try to rid as much as possible the Bermuda grass that's there. I suspect that there's probably still a little bit more. So Christy and I actually talked about it earlier tonight, and there's probably one more season of glyphosate to try to really get the last remnants of Bermuda grass, but they'll probably show up. So it's really going to be a way of the revegetation strategy will really be a way of managing out the Bermuda, which, as you know, doesn't like shade, and encouraging and revitalizing the desert that used to be there. So Tom Ellis and I have been talking about this quite a bit, and this is the approach we're recommending, and that's to rip the ground where the fairways and the tees and the greens were, similar to that photograph in the bottom left, exposing any of the Bermuda that's left, reseeding over that, and this is after the last time we used glyphosate, seeding it with native grass and straw, compacting the area, so smoothing it out, but not fully smoothing it out like you might a lawn, because you want those little pockets to capture water and help to irrigate the seeds naturally from rainfall. We may need to go back and seed it again. It's possible. Cover the area with native seed, another thing that Tom and I have talked about, which works really well and worked at a preserve west of Tucson, and that is taking some of the smaller seedlings and the seed from the existing native plants in those undisturbed areas and just planting them. Cactus, it works really well with. Spot treating invasives as we need to, probably with very, very focused poisoning of invasive species. And then any kind of other rescue plants, often in Arizona and other parts of the Southwest, when a highway is built or a road is built through a virgin desert area, there's a lot of groups that collect the cacti, collect the plants that were there before the roadway is built. So we're suggesting also that maybe some rescue plants be used on the preserve so that we can accept that from other places. In terms of the phasing, and you'll notice on every one of these phases, we're showing revegetation. I think that's going to be an ongoing process for quite a few years, because the golf course, took out all of the native plants where it was and impacted it. The first phase would be a safety phase. I mentioned the cart path doesn't have ADA access or even safe access in some places where the washes are, where it's been collapsed, where a wash is undercut. So we're recommending addressing those issues. Any heaves from plants like trees would also be taken care of there. Starting to put interpretive signage and educational signage around the preserve, and that really needs to be done in that thematic way I mentioned. And then beginning the revegetation process. So maybe starting with a few fairways and working our way towards the center, starting at the north end and working south. It really doesn't matter, just really getting a start on that. The second phase, we're recommending the ADA trails get built. That's pretty important for people that do have issues with walking. And so we're recommending that the two small trailheads and its parking, as well as the ADA trails, get built along with more revegetation as the second phase. The third phase, we're recommending the driving range node get designed and built, and then continued revegetation. And then the fourth phase would be the pond. Now, we are recommending from the safety perspective that the pond embankments, those bulkheads, get removed and the the grading get redone so that it doesn't become a safety hazard for people that might be kids playing around it or people getting near it. So that's the one part of the pond we're recommending for phase one. But then pond redevelopment would be phase four after that. And I'm happy to go to any of these slides for questions later. So we did a cost estimate. I'm not going to try to go through this
George,
over here. I'm
George, sure. Up here.
Oh, sorry.
Can you sorry, board put member. Some timing PERT charts associated with the various phases?
Yeah, that's great. Let's see. Let me back up for a minute. Oh,
yeah.
You want to talk to that?
I can talk to that. Member Temple, the phasing is all about financing. And so as every fiscal year comes up, we will ask for capital dollars to address the phasing. So it will be a long-term project. So we don't have a timing on that just because of the capital dollars, we're reliant on what is going to be submitted. Certainly, George will get into it a little bit later in terms of looking at alternative funding for through some grants and whatnot. But we don't have a timeline.
Okay. Thanks, Christy. I will say though that from the planning stage, let me back up. If you and then town council approves the plan, The next thing that the town of Oro Valley would need to do is exactly what Christy just mentioned. Go after funding or use capital dollars to start the work on the preserve. A plan, like a landscape plan or something like that, usually takes between 6 months and 9 months to develop. The construction would be, depending on the size of the project, anywhere from 3 months to even a year if you decided to take a big bite-sized chunk, or not a bite-sized chunk, but a big chunk out of the preserve to rebuild or revegetate. Usually it'll take about a year for it really to get started and to begin to establish itself. This shows the costs that we came up with. And this is what I would call a parametric cost estimate. So there's no design yet. We did have acreages and we did have linear footages for the path. But this is a kind of what I would again call a parametric view of the costs for the project. And so each of these costs is shown up here in this part of the slide in terms of the infrastructure, the revegetation, the pond, and the driving range reconstruction. Down here on the bottom, right down here, we're showing how those costs would increase over time, including cost of living rises and construction rises in cost. So altogether, the cost of the preserve, depending on when you did it, and if I could, just for 1 second, I made some notes for myself, so bear with me. So these notes right down here are what we're estimating for the first year, and then the year 2028, the year 2033, and the year 2038. I'll read it out. If you were to do the whole thing all at once, it would be in the range of $6 million. If you were to wait and do it by 2028, that cost would rise to almost $7 million. If you decided to wait even longer, close to $8 million, and then by 2038, it's up around $9 million. Now, of course, you know, in the last year, we saw lots, actually the last 2 years, we saw lots of construction rises, as you probably are aware, and things just skyrocketed around the recession and then with inflation. So if something like that were to occur, it would be different again than what we're showing there. But let me say that the trailhead, the ADA parking, signage, site furnishings, the shade structures, the wildlife blinds, they would be in that range of about $2 to $3 million to build. If you revegetated, they're in the 1.5 to 2.5 million range. And we're not talking really landscaping per se. We're talking more of a reclamation strategy, maybe with some landscaping. The pond construction would be a pretty expensive piece to tackle, and we're estimating about $2 million to $3 million for that. And then the driving range in the kind of reach of between $650,000 to $1.3 million or something in that range. With the help of volunteers, with perhaps having volunteer days to, say, clean up or to even plant. And you've seen that around town, and you've seen that in the Tucson area. That could defray the cost pretty remarkably. And since we're talking about mostly native plants, you know, they're not going to need much irrigation once they get started, and especially if they're planted at the right times. So that's costs. Did you have any other questions about that, members? And we can talk more about it after my presentation. So the final step in the master plan process will be to have town council vote on it in June. We're planning to go to the June meeting. That's June 21st in these council chambers. And that is the final step to the plan. So anything we hear from you tonight will make changes to the plan if need be based on that. And based on review from Parks and Recreation and others within the community, within the town. But that is what we're projecting as the final approval date, hopefully. I don't have any other. I didn't put together, you saw in the master plan that we included a funding chapter in the master plan. I didn't put anything about that in here. But suffice it to say, there's quite a bit of money out there from both the federal government and state government and grants from other agencies and quasi-government agencies and funds that are available for projects like this. This is a revegetation and open space, and parks are really experiencing a surge right now. And so the timing is right for developing funding strategies that could work. And with that, I'll stand for any questions or discussion. And if you'd like to hear from the public, yeah, I can sit down.
Do we want to do public now? Mm-hmm. So I'll probably hate myself for saying this, but we have 5 blue cards for public, so if anybody else, 6, if anybody else, 7, going, gone. If anybody else wants to put one in and give it to Casey. So up first, so you have 3 minutes. I'll call your name. I'll try to call it correctly. And then you'll have 3 minutes to talk. So the first up is Abbott from Fairfield Vistoso.
Good evening. My name is Walda Abbott, and I'm a resident of Fairfield Vistosa. I've been there about 2 years, so I'm a newcomer, but I've been very involved in the process. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. I would like to address 2 specific issues at this special session. These issues directly impact the residents of Fairfield Vistosa, the quality of our life, noise issues, light pollution, wildlife disruption, migration and habitat, and security. The first is obvious to all of us, and that is the proposal for a 30 to 40 car parking lot within probably 200 yards of the last house at Fairfield Vistosa. There's no provisions in the plan for security. There's no provisions in the plan for the fact that the wildlife cross, especially in the evening. There's no provisions for protecting wildlife from any light pollution. One of the issues that I was going to address seems to have been resolved by the gentleman who just gave the presentation, and that is that you're not going to put in a stargazing area just up. That was beyond me to think that you'd even consider it. We're going to have 30 or 40 parking spaces unsecured with 30 or 40 cars coming in the middle of the night with flashlights to look at stars. That is not going to work. So I'm very grateful that that proposal was taken out. There are, however, other proposals that I would like to address that I think are overkill. This is supposed to be a conservation area. There is a conservation easement objective that was stated, and that was to preserve the open space character, the natural environment, and the existing condition of the property to the extent possible. What I'm hearing is we have plans for something that is much more like a city park rather than a conservation area. You're going to have a lot of impact from traffic with no recommendations as to security. Are you going to lock those parking spaces? What's going to happen? I request that you would at least consider downsizing from 40 vehicles to perhaps 10. If they can get in after dark, you have lights that come directly in to that preservation area, conservation area. And I can tell you that having lived there, all of the animals are nocturnal. The bobcats come out at night. The javelinas are out at night. The coyotes are out at night. The deer come down the hill. And my 3 minutes are up. Anyhow, thank you for letting me speak, and I hope you would consider some of the issues that I've raised.
Thank you very much. Next up is Charles Stack.
My name is Charles Stack. I am a resident. I'm also the Town of Oro Valley Environmental Planning Advisory Council volunteer, the Pima Association of Governments. So I have a very strong background in environment and wildlife. One of the reasons my wife and I moved to Oro Valley was because of this. We were in Green Valley. When I saw what was happening up here, I said, this is really where we want to be. And as George said, it's very unique to see something go in a retrograde motion. Usually we see the devastation of the rainforests, let's say in Brazil, to actually go from something that essentially has been destroyed and to bring it back into nature is extremely, extremely unique. So I applaud you all for that. I support the plan. And I also work with University of Arizona. Have you seen the biosphere experiments going on? It's one of my projects. I'm doing the water treatment for what might end up going to the moon or Mars. And in communicating with U of A colleagues, Matt Good, research scientist, wildlife conservation management, he and I were talking about the rehabilitation of the animal population. And the golf course you were talking about was Canoa Hills in Green Valley. We have another golf course very similar, and he said that there probably is funding available to help study the repopulation of this place. I've seen more rattlesnakes out there than I saw in Green Valley the whole time I was there. We have Colorado River toads, which are endangered. We have Gila monsters. We have some amazing little critters out there. And so as this turns from a golf course into reclaimed Sonoran land, we're likely to see some pretty amazing things. And Professor Good, G-O-O-D-E, I can give my email to people. He suggested some collaboration. So I just wanted to give you, as a town official, I'm available as a resource. Christy, you know me, right? And if you have questions, et cetera, but I do confirm with George what he said. George, here's my card. That this is a great time for funding these things. We're going now, again, into a retrograde mode of let's reclaim. We're doing it in mining. We're doing it in coal mining, all sorts of areas, and there is a lot of money available. So I am available to help the town and your committee any way that I can, and I just wanted to speak in favor of this fantastic proposal. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Next up, Rosa Daly.
Hello. Hi, I'm Rosa Daly. I'm an Oro Valley resident. I live on Tisali Way. So first, I just want to say I appreciate all the work that's gone into this and putting up with us here in Oro Valley because we're very opinionated. But I want to also say that we keep forgetting that the people who live around the property who are most opinionated have lived on a golf course. They were sold a view fence. They were sold green grass and quiet except for a few golfers dropping F-bombs. But really, that was the lifestyle. And so we're having to wrap our brains around something new. And so that's why a lot of people are saying, you know, proximity to homes and what we're trying to do out here. So the first thing I want to say, which is probably not what George wants to hear, is the driving range ADA needs to be scaled back. The neighbors on Tisali, I think I have eight of them. There's Biebelhausen on 13704, Daly 13680, Braden 13660, Stegman, Tom's right over there, 13648, Stronchny 13636, Molnar 13620, Bear 13618, and Tomey 13610 have all told me to represent them tonight and say, we do not want anything on that driving range. And the reason why is because people are on it now, and it is so disruptive. Every dog barks all the way down. So you have Meadowhawk, which is part of Center Point, and you have Mulligan, which is part of Fairfield, and you have Tisali. And so it's a captured area. And when people walk around there, you know, so the dogs start barking, and they start barking, and then they start barking around, and it's crazy. And it's like, it's disruptive, and it's not peaceful, and it's not a nature preserve. You won't see any wildlife when that's going on. And the length of that ADA path is so long and so far from the parking lot, it won't be used by disabled people. It'll be used by mountain bikers or whoever else wants to take a little, you know, trip down on something where there's not a lot of people. So we're very concerned about that. We like it at least scaled way back, closer to the cart path at the top that doesn't have any houses, because most people feel like they won't have peaceful enjoyment of their property. Another concern is the kind of gardens that are being proposed. You know, most of us want the emphasis on revegetation because right now I can look out on waist-high grass on the first hole and a little bit lower on the driving range because there's different, you know, topography there. But so there's just grass everywhere, and it's like it's an invasive species. Okay, that's my time. But anyway, it's an invasive species different from the invasive species of the year before, different of the one the year before. So we need revegetation so that we can stop getting rid of invasive species. Anyway, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosa. Up next is Tom Stegman.
Thank you, Matt. Yes, thank you to the committee and Kirsty. I just wanted to express my disappointment maybe in the costs that are looked at, that we're looking at, as opposed to just trying to get this property back to a desert condition. we need to revegetate. We need to get rid of the invasive species and the grass. But taking a look at the driving range, I don't know if you've been there and experienced the wildlife that are there, and doing anything to get rid of the wildlife to me is not trying to preserve the property. A lot of people in this room have contributed a lot to Conservation Fund to try to preserve this property. And we need to consider not just the vegetation, but also the wildlife, and keeping that wildlife and the property for them is important. I know that I'm, you know, as adjacent to the driving range, I've got a little bit of concern for that, but we shouldn't disturb it, and we should not try to make something that wasn't there before. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Up next is Dick Surowiec.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the committee for taking these big paying jobs and helping the community. My name is Dick Surowiec. I've been a resident of Oro Valley for 18 years. I'm a former resident of the eighth hole on the golf course, which featured the water hole. And I do favor having a pond. I do not favor ramadas, wildlife platforms, viewing blinds. And if we're going to put that out there, then you better put plenty of money out there to keep them up. Because when you have the little kids kicking through the screens you talked about and some of the other stuff, the city's going to have to maintain that. The size of the pond needs to be looked at so that it's inviting to waterfowl. You put a little pond up there for drinking of the animals, and you're not going to get the geese and the ducks that we had when the pond was there and being active. I have a great deal of caution for the parking at that pond area. One of the things that you have to look at is from Rancho Vistoso Boulevard to Vistoso Highlands, first of all, it's a 45-mile speed limit, and I assure you that turn is made at 45 miles an hour. Vistoso Highlands goes from four lanes to two lanes very quickly, and that occurs right about where the pond is. Now, Vistoso Highlands is also the entrance for all the construction traffic to Stone Canyon. Those big trucks don't slow down for anything. You start putting parking there, someone's going to get killed, and we're talking about handicap parking to begin with, so that's a little bit different concept, and I think we need to revisit that because I don't think that's a good idea at all. I think someone's going to get hurt, and I think there's sufficient parking where we talked about off of Rancho Vistoso Boulevard to get to that pond area. Sorry. And I think that's ample. So I appreciate the efforts. I'm disappointed in the timeline because the feature of the pond is what got everybody going. Every day there's 300 to 400 people that drive by that or walk by that, and we're now looking at, and 2038, I don't care what it looks like, I'll be dead. So I hope that we can do that sooner because I'd like to have some nice-looking vegetation out my back window. Thank you.
Thank you. Just want to tell Faith Ryan that we can't talk about volleyball courts right now. that has to go at the beginning in the call to audience. Next up is Doug Iverson.
Thank you. Doug Iverson, 695 West Vistoso Highlands. Been owners and residents here for about 22 years. First, almost everything he said, I 100% agree with. Two things came to my mind. One is about the ponds. And I'm listening to a description of 1 to 3 feet with a waterfall, and I'm trying to envision what that might really look like. It is the highlight of the whole area. And then I think about these two small ponds where we will have runoff in. Having lived in that area for 22 years, my guess is if we're relying on runoff, it will be dead dry 11 months of the year. So maybe we don't try to spread those things out where there won't be water anyway to a little bigger pond that actually is a highlight of the whole process. I really wanted to begin by saying that we are elated of the options that could have evolved once the golf course was sold. Really, really appreciate, you know, the future planning of what we see. I think the pond is a highlight of that future planning and would like to see it continue to be so. It was said better by Dick than it has been by me, but 100% agree with him along that line. The other thing I wondered about, and that is, I love the idea of looking at costs because I think the city council is going to be interested in that. It also thinks it's going to scare them, and I don't think I'll live long enough either at the range of what that looks like to me. But what I heard is, if in fact we can get volunteers, we can greatly reduce those costs. If we can generate grants, we can greatly reduce those costs. It seems like in the presentation in June, we ought to look at, here's the worst case situation, but here's alternatives that will make this affordable and want us to move before 85% of us are dead. And that's just the numbers. I'm not saying who you are. I'm just saying that's the possibility there. So, again, please understand appreciative of what you're doing and moving this forward. All the work that's gone into it, very appreciative. I'm just looking at it from a perspective of maybe ways that we can speed the process along by looking at how to manage some of those costs and making that part of our presentation. Because I think what you've shown us potentially could scare the daylights out of a few of the people. Thank you.
Thanks for the actuary update. Next up is, and actually the last one, is Larry Mars.
My name is Larry Mars. I live in Center Point, Vistoso, and I've been a resident of Oro Valley for the last 17 years. I've lived on the golf course two of those times. Sorry to see it's not a golf course, but that's life. So I'd like to address a couple of issues. One is I would support Mr. Iverson and Dick. That the pond was a center point. And it may not have to be in the same design as the pool was prior, because it doesn't have to be that high, maybe. And we could have some slopes where animals could come down and drink out of it. As it sets now, or as it had set, it was impossible for them to do that. And I think it's important to put water out for animals, and that's something I don't see in this plan. I'd love to see some areas that were set aside and for feeding and drinking the wildlife. I love the waterfall. I love the old design several years back. If we could recreate that again, I think it would add a tremendous amount to the properties and people's desire to have a nice feature near that road where a lot of people use. Secondly, on the trail issue, I'm awfully glad to see that it was decided not to put trails behind everybody's house. But I would like to make a suggestion. I think it is inherently dangerous for walkers and bikers to occupy the same space at the same time. That's an accident, by the way, is what that means. And I think I love the idea of keeping the concrete, fixing the bad spots, but put a side trail to parallel that instead of two on either side where they're gravel. Put one next to it that's asphalt so that bikers use the asphalt, walkers use, or vice versa, walkers use the concrete, and they alternate every other day. In other words, we had this in Minneapolis, in the big parks. On odd days, bikers go clockwise, walker goes counterclockwise, which always means they're going to be meeting face-to-face. On the even days, you switch that. You put a couple of signs out there explaining to people so that you don't have that mixture of bikes coming up behind someone and they're not hearing them. You separate the two, and maybe it doesn't have to be adjoining. It could be a little bit of separation with some walking rock in between, whatever. But I think that'd work. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for your comments. So that's the last of the blue cards.
Yes. Yes, Chair Wood, that is the last of the blue card. So George and I are here to field questions.
Okay, I'll start. The ponds, which I like the ponds. I was a picturesque guy. But I've had a couple of people talk to me, and I'm a bit concerned about the mosquito populations and how we can make sure that through this process, you make sure you're not putting up a super breeding ground.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk to that. There's a number of ways to take care of mosquito problems. One is to have the water move. So if it sits still, like a pond, it becomes stagnant and does become a breeding ground for mosquitoes. So having it move definitely will reduce that. Another thing that someone brought up that I failed to mention is that those ponds, all three in that portion of the presentation, which is here, they would all be interconnected with a water system. It wouldn't just be harvested water. The third thing I wanted to mention is that there's actually a native fish that eat mosquito larvae, and there's Gambusia, which is an African fish that eats mosquito larvae. And they're very easy to seed into water features like that, and they control mosquitoes incredibly well. So those are, from a management perspective, those work really well.
George, just could you also go over, since you're on this pond issue, could you also go over the concept of, or the conceptual design for water drinkers, wildlife? And because I thought I heard you, that this would be set up for wildlife drinking.
Yes. Happy to do that, Member Salida. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Let's see. I'm going to switch to that plan. So part of the plan and part of what we included in the cost estimate was to use some of the old bunkers, some of the old sand traps, and use them for wildlife drinkers. The sand would be conducive to a sort of, I don't know, edge treatment for that. We've done that before, and we've done wildlife drinkers that actually get fed by collecting water from washes into a cistern and then released as just natural water. They could also be hooked up to a water system so that the drinkers would never be dry. But one of the proposals that we made in the plan is to have a number of those bunkers in various parts of the preserve all throughout it be used as drinkers. The other thing is for the pond area, these would be drinkers, all three of those ponds as well. So, and then of course the washes contribute to that also. So wildlife drinkers would be part of what we're doing, board member. Thank you. What we're suggesting, sorry.
Georgia, can you elaborate why we need two blinds in this pond known presentation?
Why we need wildlife blinds? Two?
Why do we need two?
Board member Temple, I don't think I said two. I'm not following, I'm sorry. I said that we're recommending some blinds around the entire preserve. I didn't say two, but...
Well, I'm just looking at the drawing.
Oh, I see. I see. Now I understand. This is this is our artist rendering of what it might look like. It's not a specification for a number. So we're showing two on this drawing. You're absolutely correct, board member. But that's just a representation. It's not a plan per se.
With that having been said, can you elaborate how many in total for the entire project you're looking at?
We didn't actually come up with a total number, but I would say just looking at the... Oops, sorry. You'd probably... I mean, if I were king of the world and I were putting in wildlife blinds, I'd definitely put in probably a couple, maybe three at most, around the pond area. So somewhere in there. Because some wildlife won't... Some wildlife does actually isn't nocturnal, and they'll come. The other place might be maybe around the driving range if it gets revegetated. That might be a real area that wildlife would collect because it's a big area, and the others aren't so much. I don't know that I'd put blinds in many other places, and blinds can come in many different forms. What we drew on this drawing is a kind of artist's representation. It's our representation of what a blind could look like. But we've done blinds as simple, and I've seen blinds as simple as just a wall with some holes in it and vegetation around it that could be used just to hide from that wildlife. So it can be any number of ways to design that.
So quick question about the pond. I was under the impression when we left the last meeting that, as we said at the beginning of this meeting, nobody ever really kind of went one way or the other. And a lot of that was due to not knowing the pricing of things. On this presentation, there is pricing of things. Was any pricing gone into the other pond concepts that you presented at the last meeting, or only this pond concept?
That's a good question, Member Lando. The price that we came up with was not just for the ponds. It was for this whole area that would be revegetated. If the pond were something more like what it was, it would be a substantial amount more than the $2 million, $2 to $3 million that we put in our cost estimate. It would be a very large number if we did something like that. So this is the smallest amount of water other than not doing anything with the water and just sloughing off the sides and leaving it as is and revegetating it. Did I answer your question?
Yep.
Great, thanks.
So my last question, so you have 1 through 4 in the priority. If grants were available or fundraising was done, would that change the fourth, the pond? Would it move it up in the pecking order if some money would become available?
Chair Wood, the answer is yes. So we're the hierarchy of priority certainly started with safety, right? And so that's our A number one. And then the other things were looked at as it relates to the revegetation was consistent. The pond was last for a couple reasons. The pond is in phase one as it relates to dropping the sides down and just making it safe, but not adding additional improvements. If we're able to leverage grant funding and alternative funding, then certainly that can move up to phase 1.2.
Sometime before 2038.
Yes.
We'll pick a date that's a little sooner than 2048 for the next meeting, or 2038.
So I had a question not related to the pond. I really liked your education. I've got young kids, so this is my thinking is, but I saw that you're only starting at kindergarten. Is there a way that we can leverage the community members who have children who are younger than kindergarten, who maybe are home with their kids and would be walking the trails during the day? Is there any sort of thought there for that population?
Did you want to talk to that?
Yeah, good question. As it relates to the work that ACORN Group did, they were really focused on that K-8. So that is the curriculum, if you will, that was developed. And I know that she has, Jennifer Rigby, was looking also at the Arizona State standards as well to align that. But in terms of pre-K, I think there's plenty of opportunities to have some hands-on learning opportunities that could be either led by a volunteer group, by our staff, and do some nature walks, some exploration. I think, you know, a four-year-old would probably like digging for artifacts as well. So, but in terms of the formalized curriculum, the pre-K was not considered.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I like that idea. And then I was also thinking about those outdoor classrooms. As a former teacher, when you take kids on field trips, especially in Arizona, those outdoor classrooms are fun, but kids get really hot. Was there any thought about, I know shade would be hard on a driving range, but what is the thinking about how that would be accessible to young children in the heat of Arizona?
And the area that is identified was really to try to tuck it into existing trees. And then where the teacher, the presenter, whomever, it would be a small shade structure. It does get warm, and so certainly we'd have to limit the conversation, right? So you're not getting an hour and a half lecture. You're probably getting a 10-minute lecture and, you know, again, trying to take advantage of the natural shade. Oh, go ahead.
One other thing I'd like to add to that, board member. One of the recommendations we have in the master plan is to have a shade structure that is made out of solar collectors for the shade structure and classroom. Excuse me, sorry. Down here near Innovation Academy. So that way, kids would have shade, and so would the teacher, but they'd also have a way to charge phones and other kinds of devices that kids use, iPads and whatever. So as part of that classroom presentation and work. And I wanted to go back to something else you asked that Christy artfully and did a good job of discussing, and that's this goal right here. We see the preserve as being something that is inclusive of all ages, from a mom or dad that might have a two-year-old with them to a person that might not be here in 2038. just every age group possible should be part of the learning and the education associated with the preserve. So I just wanted to mention that.
My question is about, we haven't talked about, one of the speakers mentioned this, about the lighting.
Oh.
So what do we see? Are there going to be hours posted, or how is that going to work?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Member Muhart. The preserve hours are, make sure I'm saying this, dawn to dusk. So we do not plan on having any lighting in the preserve. Additionally, we are not proposing any lighting in the parking lots. We will not have lighting in the preserve. And we are not proposing lighting in the parking lots. That is also the preference from our Oro Valley Police Department. Other trailheads that we have in our community are not lit either.
Okay, shade was also a major thing on my mind as well as a nurse and a parent of little kids, but you seem to answer all of those for me, so thank you. I did want to talk a little bit on that phase approach. It seems to go from, as you mentioned, safety to what I'm envisioning in my head is excess desires. I'll just put it that way. But there, even in the Phase one, there seems to be things, it would be nice to see like an absolute must do versus this is suggested. Because even in phase one, we talk about safety. I know there's been a lot brought up about the width of the paths and needing more space around the paths to either get out of the way or not walk on concrete. But what is in this proposal is, when I was reviewing what was sent out, very expensive to have that gravel on both sides and really expand it out. And I know from the previous one, that's not the only option there is to expand the width. So I was a little bit concerned about the cost of that gravel and then adding those crushed gravel trails in other places around Oro Valley that those are at in monsoon season, they get wiped out. And so the cost of maintaining those crushed gravel trails, I'm a little bit concerned about that as well, because during monsoon season, those just seem to wipe away. So I was just thrown off by how much those crushed gravel trails are to actually install, and it was the biggest price tag on that phase one. So just wanted to bring that up as well.
Thank you for the comment. crushed gravel is a good trail material. It's the least expensive paving approach that can be used. It gets wiped out by the monsoons if it's in a drainage way, but not so much if it's not. It can be also stabilized. There's a company in Phoenix that makes a stabilizer that is mixed with crushed gravel. And crusher fines, and it will stabilize it to almost a hard pack, like almost like asphalt. So there are a number of ways to deal with that in the future. But good comments, board member. I agree with what you're saying. It's not cheap. It's less expensive than asphalt or concrete or even grass with irrigation, but.
Yeah, I think that's where having that absolute must do versus this would be a good thing to do, or this would be a desired thing mm-hmm. to do would be really helpful, I think, to look at.
One other comment, board member. As we get to the, I did a lot of comments like, or I mentioned a lot of things like if, we could do this. Those are all going to be shalls for the final plan.
George, just one more question on the bike paths since we're on that. With respect to the effectiveness for safety, having these gravel paths on the side, could you talk about that a little bit?
So, and I can, board member Salida. Saletta, thank you. I thought you might have been Italian. Just kidding. Oh, you are? I've got quite a bit of Italian blood myself. As I mentioned during the presentation, a safe multi-use trail, which could accommodate pedestrians, bikers, rollerbladers, scooters, even people in wheelchairs, is a minimum of 12 feet wide. That's the national standard for a multi-use trail. And typically, on multi-use trails of that size, you would put a line down the center, just like a road, so that people that are going in one direction versus the other know that. And I love the idea, by the way, that someone mentioned about managing bikers and walkers. I thought that was a really creative way of dealing with that. An 8-foot wide trail is about the size of, it is the size of, the minimum size for a bike path. However, the cart path does not have the correct alignment geometry. So it was meant to be a cart path, not a bike path. So a bike path or a bike lane on roads have a much shallower geometry and don't take the tight hairpin turns that the cart path does. So it's we're recommending reusing it partially because of what we heard from both yourselves and from the community. However, it's a cart path. So it was built as a cart path and it is best suited to be in a cart path. A trail is quite a bit different. So the reason we're recommending gravel on its sides as shoulders, if you will, is to make it a safer multi-use kind of approach to that path. I also thought the idea of having the trail on one side versus the other that someone mentioned, I can't remember who it was, I thought was a good idea as well. Instead of having one side, instead of having two sides, a 4-foot path, having a little bit wider Crusher Fines path on one side could work really well too. Did that answer your question, board
member? Yes, it does. And I think just the room alone, I'm an avid bicyclist, and I ride the loop many times, and I think if you look at the loop, there are many places that it is not 12 feet. And yet folks naturally play it safe. Walkers stay to the right, and bikers say they're passing on the left. And sometimes you have to say your other left, but every so often, you know. But I think just giving walkers that room will be pretty effective, at least from my experience. So I also like the idea of limiting maybe bicyclists to certain days, you know, because there are a lot of curves there. And I think that's the toughest part. The straightaways, you know, those are going to be a lot safer. But I think if you did have something like scheduling it, and again, and a question for Christy, these are things that are coming down the road and can be looked at. Right now, this is a conceptual master plan, but some of these things can be looked at much more closely as we get to actual implementation. Is that correct?
Board member, yes, that is correct. And so we're the master plan with the concept plans really solidify what we're going to do. The level of detail comes next, right? So when the time comes that we have funding to address, say, 2 miles of a shoulder, we will have to dive into the details in terms of the design, but also where should those 2 miles be? Personally, it shouldn't be a 2-mile stretch. We need to identify the most critical, those blind curves, So that does give the pedestrian a safe space to step aside. And that's the beauty. That's one of the benefits of the loop, right? Even though it does sometimes reduce in size, it has those shoulders. So you can step off and walk safely and get out of the way of the cyclist.
I was thinking instead of the crushed gravel or whatever, what if you just cleared the area on both sides? You could keep it clear of cactus or plants or whatever, and that way that would bring down the cost of that too. You're still mm-hmm. giving the pedestrian room to step off. Obviously, they won't want to do it if a cactus is there. So you clear those areas on both sides, and we still have the room.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, Board Member Muthart. And we have already made really good strides in doing that. I would say for the most part, there is about a 2-foot to 3-foot cleared area for people or for pedestrians to step off. We would ideally like to have it more of a smooth transition, so it's not an ankle twister or even in terms of cycling, catching your tire in there. But as a phased approach, right, giving people a safe respite to begin with, and then we can start taking care of things, and then we can go back and look at some of the more critical areas where it makes sense to put some decomposed granite, because that is a more critical space. And again, those blind curves are for the pedestrian and the cyclist, and sometimes it's coming out of a tunnel and you can't hear, and many people are wearing earbuds anyway, so that just leads to the lack of your surroundings.
This is for you, Christy. Somewhere along the line of the presentation, I heard some comments about staffing. Are you looking at having some on-site staff as part of this plan?
So you're stealing my thunder, Board Member Temple, because that'll be in the next presentation as it relates to the budget. So in the proposed budget, the parks team will have a full-time park maintenance worker too. Just means that they have some certifications to them, and then a part-time monitor. We still have funding for Brightview to also provide services. The way our park maintenance team works, we have dedicated areas, but we also work in teams. So we will have staffing on site. And then in terms of programming, our Recreation and Culture Division will begin the development of programming there, working with user groups, Audubon Society, for example, developing a volunteer corps, working with perhaps the preserve, or the Friends, excuse me, they changed their name. So. You're welcome.
Christy, can you bring up the map of the master plan?
This one?
No, the one that, oh, that one works. First of all, I think the phased approach makes a ton of sense in terms of what you're prioritizing. Totally agree with the comments about widening the path, having been up there biking. And not only do we have pedestrians, we have pedestrians with dogs on leashes. So that actually raises the safety factor, I think, a little bit too. So mm-hmm. I appreciate you guys taking a look at that. I guess the one thing that I want us to consider is the driving range area. The comments made by folks that live there, where people were not walking in their backyard before, and now they're essentially going to be walking in their backyard, if I understand what those concerns were. And, you know, you went from, you know, people hacking golf balls, and, you know, maybe they get a golf ball in their backyard, but they don't have people on a cart path going that way. So I can appreciate those comments because that is kind of a change of use, frankly, right? There's going to be people and dogs there where before there were just golf balls. So I don't know if you guys are willing to address that at all or if that's something we can take a look at.
Thank you for your comments. So the driving range node is really our education node, and that's where, as George mentioned, the areas for the interpretive gardens, et cetera. The trail that's right along here and the backyard is right about here, as George mentioned, is about 3/4 of a football length. So you're on the 70-yard line, right? There certainly could be consideration to, you know, maybe reduce it and create more of a distance. I think that again, when the spirit of this is that this is a node that's already disturbed, and we wanted, based on the feedback, to identify an education node so people can have an experience out there in addition to walking. This is the place that made the most sense. Again, we're not disturbing any native desert. So the concept is it will be here. As we focus on this for funding and really start to dive into the design detail, that's when this will really get refined. And so the trail perhaps could do a figure eight or, you know, something very different. But we would definitely, when that time comes, certainly re-engage the community, specifically those where it's most affected.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. So I move to approve the 2023 Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve Master Plan as recommended. May I have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second, and now we'll have discussion. First up will be Council?
Yeah.
I screwed up too.
Board Member
Landau.
Okay, well, I think I was able to say most of my comments. I do want to say I commend the work, George, that you and your company have done. I think it is obvious, at least to myself, that you've listened to feedback at each of these meetings. You've taken it with you, and you've re-presented feedback that has come in various forms. So I commend all of that work as we will continue to refine it. I think overall my biggest concerns would be safety. It sounds like tonight there still would be some security concerns that may need to be addressed as we move forward in regards to parking lots closing or capacity arrangements, things like that. But otherwise, all my questions otherwise were answered, and I just want to say thank you for listening to the community at each of these meetings.
Ditto.
Yeah, I think it's a good plan, and I like the idea that, and I hope everyone understands that it's a conceptual master plan. And as Christy pointed out, particularly in the driving range demonstration garden area, those things could be scaled back, both the paths and the gardens themselves. And it's going to be a function not only of what we want, but what we can afford. So those are factors there, too. I agree with the safety issues, particularly on the bike path. And no matter where you are, parking is always an issue. Thank you.
George, Christy, excellent program for us tonight. It filled in a lot of gaps for me personally. I want to just say that from the perspective of the people out here, this entire effort is for the entire community of Oro Valley. That's been the heart and soul of what I was concerned about. And there'll be times as we go through this thing that we'll have
a pause where we have to go out and get feedback. That's very important. I would urge all of you to continue to participate as those things come up. And I think it'll be a wonderful program or project when it's completed. Thank you.
Yeah, I thank you for your time and your energies. I'm really excited to have my kids grow up in the backyard of this project. Mm. I think it is a great resource for them. I think they will learn the value of their community, not just buildings and buildings and buildings. And when you go inside, they can reach a space where they can explore and learn. And I'm really excited to be a part of that process. So thank you.
So approving this general plan doesn't mean approving everything. There's details that may not come about. Is that right?
Member Muthart, I may need a little more explanation.
Okay,
from you.
So what I'm saying is that due to financial restraints, due to funding, due to all of this, we may approve this master plan knowing that certain items may never come to fruition.
So I would say that that's accurate, and that's, again, the vision of a master plan is a roadmap, and it gives direction and it gives consensus. It gives a sense of relief and confidence that this is the plan. This is how we're going to be asking for funding. This is how we're going to be programming, and that's the spirit and the core of planning. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a very long-term plan. There will be changes over the course of years, as I just mentioned as we dive into the details. These may be in different locations. It may only be half. It will really, you know, it might be that this we want this to be a priority, but we only have this amount of money. So you program around that. So.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
One other thing, Member Muthart. There are quite a few, the Desert Botanic Garden in Phoenix, your own garden or the Tucson garden, they have been the subject of updates, master plan updates, because not everything gets built in the first place. Things change, people's ideas change, and so there could even be updates to the master plan in the future, depending on how far you get. So it's.
And my comment was not just for us, but also for the audience, knowing that there are things that they are against and there are things that they are for. So it's very hard to please everybody, mm-hmm. but knowing the consensus or knowing the majority of people want to do this or that or whatever, it's just because we approve this master plan doesn't mean that everything is going to happen. That was my point.
Okay. I really look at this as a framework to build around. It's a long term, you know, things will change, but I think the total concept is terrific. George, you've done a great job. Christy, Gail, Mateer, thanks so much for everything you guys did. This looks so much better than when I was looking at those pictures of the memory care facility in my backyard. So I'm very happy.
Chairwood, I'm going to take a roll call vote, if you don't mind.
That would be fine.
Thank you. Okay, so Chairwood moved to approve. Philip Saletta, you did the second, so now I'm just going to take a vote. Chair Temple, yay or nay?
Yay.
Board Member Horvath?
Yay.
Board Member Landau?
Yay.
Board Member Muthart?
Yay.
Board Member Varies?
Yay.
Thank you. Sorry, Chair Matt Wood.
Alphabetical, huh? Yay.
And I don't believe you asked Mr. Saletta either.
Philip Saletta?
Yay.
Okay, thank you.
With that, the motion carries, and we thank everybody for coming. We're going to take a five-minute recess, so most of you can politely run out the door, and then we'll be back. Okay, Christy, my goal is 9 o'clock.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, George.
Thanks, Christy. I'll be in touch.
So we have to call the next agenda item.
Let's call the meeting back to order. And next up is Christy talking about Naranja.
Technically, Mr. Chair, we actually need to read the item into the agenda. You can do it yourself, or we can have your chair do it, or your clerk do it, or I could do it and really blow this up for you. Progress update, presentation, and discussion regarding the Oro Valley 25, not billion, but million-dollar park bond project approved by the Town Council in Resolution R21-47.
Thank you. So this will be a pretty quick update. The community center, as you know, we've completed the tennis and pickleball courts last summer. We completed the Conquistador irrigation project, and we have started the Kenyatta irrigation project that started mid-April, and it will be completed end of September. It will open. The Conquistador will close for overseeding. All 36 holes will be open the first week of November for play. Last project at the community center is the parking lot, so the dirt lot. We are going to regrade that, put a surface treatment on there, and add more parking. The design is complete. Now we're working with contractors, and the goal is to get that project started next month to be completed end of July, early August. If you have any questions, I'll wait to the end, I guess. Okay, Naranja Park, the value engineering project, everything is still the same. The items that we mentioned last time are still in the project, so the Muset roadway will connect all the way up to Tangerine. We still plan on adding a RC field, the skate park and pump track. Man, I'm struggling here. The two sport fields, additional parking, the pickleball courts, and the splash pad. There will be a bit of a delay in terms of the sprigging. If you recall, the goal was to get that done in May. Well, the grass farm, the temperatures, because of our cool winter, the temperatures has not heated up enough for the sprigs to take root. So we're anticipating sprigging in July. We're anticipating sprigging in July, which will then kind of push back opening the fields. But, you know, I'm not going to complain about the cool weather and the additional moisture. Multi-use paths. Again, the Naranja path, we have federal funding to make that connection all the way from La Cañada to First. It's on the north side. We're working with ADOT. ADOT will manage that project. Because of the federal component of that, it'll take a little bit longer, so we're looking at probably a year and a half to 2 year implementation. And then the Cañada course, so basically we're connecting the area that does not have hardscape, so from the community center entrance
to Kenyatta Hills on the west side. We will be adding a multi-use path, and so as you go further south, it connects to a sidewalk, and as you go further north, it stays a sidewalk and then connects to an MUP. So that whole stretch will have a hard surface. Any questions? Yes.
Sorry, quick question. Is there, remind me, I know that there's the expansion road up to Tangerine from Naranja Park. Is anything being done about the current entrance into the park? There's a lot of dissatisfaction in the community with how that's currently laid out.
Member Landau, no, there is not. That's not funded in this project.
Christy, in light of all the inflationary impacts, have you had to scratch anything from the original plan?
Well, the value engineering project, I just noticed that this isn't on that screen. My apologies, but you do have this presentation in your... What do I have to do, Justin? I was cruising right through. Or Jason, Justin, my apologies. Oh, I just need to slide it there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Good gracious, my apologies. So, Board Member Temple, when we met, I think it was in either December or February, I mentioned the value engineering that we needed to do in terms of reducing the scope. And so what we did is we reduced the number of sport fields. We reduced the number of pickleball courts. We culled down the size of the splash pad. But we're still doing a splash pad. We're still doing pickleball courts. We're still adding two new oversized sport fields. So we're still adhering to the spirit of the bond while, you know, also adhering to a budget.
I know that there was, my understanding is a fatal accident on Naranja Drive, and I know there were a lot of community members who are really looking forward to having some sort of path. My understanding is that's delayed. Is there anything that we can do in the meantime to add safety to pedestrians who may be using that before we can obviously create the path?
Board Member, we are working with our town engineer and looking at some possible engineering changes that we can make in the interim. It was definitely a tragic moment in our community. And so we're looking to see what we can do until we are able to complete that other project.
And then I think there's also been a lot of dissatisfaction with like the turn into the parking lot. I think that's what you were referring to. Is there any like additional signage that we could add there or
right there?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, right there. Christy. I understand we really have a great item we want to talk about here, but this has very little to do with our bond project. I understand the passion, but we need to stay on topic.
Okay. But to clarify for the turn, are you talking about this turn? My apologies. Board Member Landau, I thought you meant this coming in off of Naranja. So this will be widened, this area. So to make that right-hand turn coming this way, it will be widened a bit. But then also this will be a new entry and this will be a new entry. So you'll get some relief here for probably the only people turning in here are the ones coming to the playground and, you know, fields maybe one and two. Likely people that are using these fields will use these new entry points.
Is there a timeline for when that's supposed to be widened? Are we talking about a year from now?
Oh, with the it'll be inclusive of this project.
Stuff there, that's the piece.
Yeah, it's nice. Right, so here is very, very tight before. Because we do have the construction fencing. So the goal is that, you know, when these fields are sprigged, we're definitely going to, you know, kind of mark them off and then try to get some of the other amenities open. But I agree, especially with that construction fencing, it's really tight. And then also in this plan where these intersections are, there will be some lighting there, just again, because it's really dark out there also. And this one. Any other questions? Okay. You have to introduce the next item.
Okay, that's what I was getting ready to do. I was making sure you were done. Special session agenda item number 3, presentation and discussion of the fiscal year 23-24 Parks and Recreation, spelled that wrong, budget requests.
Okay, let's see if I can. Okay, here we go. So, as you know, our mission statement is Inspire Connection Through Recreation. The subtitles of those are Connecting People to People, People to Nature, and People to Community. So everything reflective in this budget in terms of our programming, our capital work, is all funnels back to our mission statement. And I would actually maybe argue that this is probably one of the few mission statements that people remember, because they're usually multi-line paragraphs. So our current year accomplishments, high level, we initiated a mental health community conversation. We finished the senior programming task force and have implemented some senior programming. Membership growth from the highest months in 2019, pre-COVID, to our highest months to date. Our community center membership has increased 55%. Aquatic 73% and golf 50%. So we've seen quite the jump because it dropped to virtually zero in 2020. And then, of course, the Vistosa Trails Nature Preserve and initiating and executing that this year. Personnel-wise, our superintendent, Tom Ellis, was recognized as the Outstanding Park Professional of the Year from the Arizona Park and Recreation Association. And then the Outstanding Adaptive Program, our ICAN2 program, that's our inclusion program, was recognized as the Outstanding Adaptive Program, and that has been led by Nicole Malonis. As many of you know, Lynn-Ann Dellerman, who had a 22-year career with the town of Aurora Valley, retired. And with that retirement, we were able to do some internal promotions. So John Schumacher, the man that was sitting over there, was promoted to the Recreation Culture Manager. Amanda Hale slid into his spot as the Assistant Manager at the Community Center. In the meantime, we also had another Assistant Recreation Manager take a position at U of A. So that provided an opportunity for Shanda Yazzie to be promoted. And then when we promoted Amanda Hale, that left her supervisor position open. So Nicole Malonis took that on. So it's been a great, wonderful transition. But to me, the best part is we had the internal talent to be able to do that. And then these celebrations, you might be able to see yourself in some of these pictures. And so this right here. This one right here is at our JDK park for the playground ribbon cutting. This was the ribbon cutting for the tennis court, pickleball court. This was the Conquistador Golf Course Irrigation Project. This was our ribbon cutting for the Vistosa Trails Nature Preserve. And this was the ribbon cutting and celebrating the garage restoration project at Steam Pump Ranch. And we had one groundbreaking ceremony at Naranja Park. So, whew, it's been a busy year. Uh, So every 2 years, town council develops a strategic plan, and it's a two-year plan really to focus funding, focus work efforts, and the majority of these are derived from the general plan. So if, in terms of like how does the general plan get implemented, the general plan goes to a strategic plan that goes to capital, that goes to programming, and that's sort of the hierarchy of how decisions are made, which the general plan is, you know, community driven. So there are three focus areas for recreation and culture: invest and maintain in recreation assets. And so this is really related to our physical assets. The second one is invest and maintain in our trail system. We will be, once we complete this master plan project, we'll have a little bit of a break, and then we're going to take a dive into another master planning project as it relates to our trail system. And then the last one is really focused on our programming and resident engagement, and focusing on next year, the town of Oro Valley will celebrate its 50th birthday of incorporation, and then implementing just multi-generational programming as well as some arts and culture programming. The divisions within the department: administration, park management, aquatics, community center, recreation and culture, and then the Indigo Golf contract. So the administration division, certainly we're administering the Vistosa Trails master plan, and we'll have direct oversight of the implementation of that. This is also where all of the marketing and promotion budget and strategies are managed, and then, as I mentioned, the trails master plan. If you took a dive into the budget document, you might see something related to credit card fees. We actually removed the credit card fees from administration and added those to the business nodes that are actually making those transactions. So that's a new line item in the community center fund, in the aquatic center, as well as the recreation and culture. Park management, we're going to be having some new amenities coming online this fiscal year, and so there will be focus with that. As mentioned earlier, we are looking to bring on a full-time park maintenance worker too, and a part-time monitor to work with the new amenities coming on, as well as rolling the whole group into Vistosa Trails and adding that extra capacity for the work there. At Steam Pump Ranch, looking at adding some solar lighting there for evening. The master plan identified exterior lighting with a significant lighting plan, electrical throughout, and the efficiencies of solar made us rethink this, and it's a significant savings. We added solar lighting to the walking path at Riverfront Park about 2 years ago, and it's been terrific. So that's the strategy at Steam Pump. Of course, you know, the Vistosa Trails Nature Preserve is mentioned, and then we will continue to do to implement our overseeding program on our sport fields. The Aquatics Division, focusing on water quality. In our capital project, we're plan on installing an oxygen system. Again, this is really focused on the recreation pool. The work that we were doing this year was focused on the Olympic pool. There are two separate systems. So what we will be doing is the smaller rec pool, which also supplies water and the whole circulation system to the splash pad and the slide. Continuing to host diverse programming. We have a National Masters Artistic Swimming, formerly known as Synchronized Swimming, event coming up. And then also looking at implementing some fitness classes, some aquatic classes at the community center, again, as part of that multi-generational programming. The community center, if you haven't been there lately, we have converted one of the racquetball courts into what we're calling the rec lounge. So there's a shuffleboard table, foosball, there's a ping pong back there. This is just sort of like a hangout lounge. And then here will be gaming systems, primarily focused on that kind of tween age. Our kids zone goes up to age 8, and those 8-year-olds really don't like it in there. And then in order to be in the community center without an adult, you have to be 12. So there's a missing gap, and so we're really think that this will help with our youth membership as well as family membership. But it's also a really cool hangout, so I really see this as a multi-generational space for people to use. The exterior walkway, so when we redid our tennis courts, you know, the lighting is very, very precise. If we don't have tennis going on, the lights aren't on, so that means when you walk from the parking lot into the community center in the evenings or early mornings, it's really dark. So adding some lighting on that walkway. And then focusing at the push property. So there's a bleachers, a grandstand that is actually has not been in use for about 1.5 years because it's in such poor condition. So we're going to remove that and then just make the site reasonable and clean. And then we'll come back. We'll work with our tennis operator and the tennis community to decide what we want to do there in the future. But we have to get that safety hazard out of there. And then, of course, more multi-generational programming. Recreation culture, focusing on community events. If you recall, when we did the master plan, community events was the number one most desired program. And so we will continue to do the events we have, but we also are going to be introducing the new event, and we're looking to do a balloon glow. So in an evening, those big, gigantic hot air balloons in the evening, and you blow them up at night with the oh, it's stunning. It's wonderful. Google it. Steam pump ranch programming. I'll when I go over my department updates, I'll share with you some of the new programming, but again, because the garage is open, we have staff there, we have already implemented new programming, so, you know, it's working. Again, the volunteer program, big focus, there will be a big focus on Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve, senior programming implementation, and then, obviously the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve program. Overall, I would say it's generally speaking, it's a fairly flat budget. Most of the increases are due to the general cost of goods are being increased, the personnel, the trails master plan, and then adding on that new event. And then community center fund, it's a little less, that's primarily because of capital. But so generally speaking, that's fairly flat. And as you can see in this comparison, 2024, is pretty on target. For golf, again, they plan on promoting 45 holes. Their goals are to retain their loyalty base, new member and customer acquisition. They have a pretty robust youth program from PGA as well as the First Tee program. And then we partner with them on some of the events that we do. So the movies on the lawn, we do the Snow V. So we have a really good working relationship with them when we conduct events. The 36 holes, as mentioned earlier, we'll have all 36 in November after the last irrigation project is done. Again, wanting to retain that membership at about a 340 membership base. The demand for golf, as everybody knows, during COVID spiked, right? It was on a significant decline. We just had a 2-hour conversation about that. And then during COVID, it really spiked, and so it's leveled off. We found it just to level off. We've not seen a dip. So so that's good in terms of golf play and, golf revenue. The staffing model will remain the same, and some of the maintenance practices that our superintendent has been implementing that, you know, as George said, when you do a landscape project, it takes about 1 or 2 years to really see the fruits of your labor. And so we're expecting to see some improved course conditions as well. Food and beverage, again, will remain open year-round. We'll implement the evenings, the themed evenings during our peak season. And, you know, and working with a golf pro shop for those charity events and social outings. And then, you know, host community life events and their staffing model will remain the same. They're not expecting any changes there. And then at Push, it will reopen in November. So the Push course will kind of have its last hoorah this coming weekend of Mother's Day weekend, and then we will close. And during that closure, we're looking to introduce some disc golf play, still working through the levels of detail, but Indigo believes that that can help generate some additional money during our closure. And again, really working with the Friends groups to continue to market that. It will open November 1st, and that will be for ball golf only. And then financials, the 36 hole, as you can see, there's about a 440 EBITDAR difference as it relates to the pro forma that was developed about 4 years ago, I want to say. There's about a $300,000 net benefit to this EBITDA. Also, just bear in mind that FY23-24, we still only have 18 holes for a portion of that season. Food and beverage, we're looking at about a $71,000 net profit per contract. The vendor keeps the first $30,000, and then the difference is split 50-50 with the vendor in the town. So, bravo. And, of course, the nine-hole golf course, we're looking at a bit of a profit there. And again, that's just been with the strong play and then diversifying the revenue with disc golf events and a little bit of off-season play for disc golf. Capital projects, I kind of lump these in together. So the AquaGen system, so as I mentioned, this is with the recreation amenities. We have a lump sum to address sidewalk repair and accessibility, and this will be inclusive of what we do at Vistoso. The Kenyatta course, the cart path, and some greens bunkers. Push golf, we're looking at doing some work on the tee boxes and the greens and then some of the really worn areas and fairways. The Push Tennis Shop ADA restrooms, so that tennis shop and the restrooms will get a remodel, so they will be accessible this year, actually starting next week. We're going to be doing some exterior improvements, ADA improvements, so from the parking lot, making sure that there's an accessible route to the pro shop upstairs as well as downstairs. As mentioned, with steam pump, the solar lighting, and then also the tack building that's there. So the tack building is not inside the historic core, so it's not subject to the standards of a historically significant designation. But we're looking at doing the design for that and working with the Historical Society as they have desire to have some climate-controlled storage as well as a space for their collections committee to do work. And then also is it, you know, being a shared use with the recreation and culture team in terms of having, again, some space in there for storage. But we will, that'll be a project that we work collectively with the Historical Society on and the Historic Preservation Commission. The community center, so the elevator project, I think I shared that with you a meeting or two ago. So this will be a pretty significant project. Right now, when you walk into the golf side of the house or the community center, you sort of like walk up a hill, then you walk upstairs, and you're at this landing, and then you either go upstairs or downstairs. The new version of this is when you get out of your car, you're going to walk straight in, and so you'll look through this glass window, and you'll look straight out, and you'll see the putting green. To the left will be an elevator that can get you up to that mid-level or the top level. To the right will be switchback stairs to get you up to that top level. There'll be a bit of a catwalk to get from that top level into the restaurant. It will increase the ADA, the handicap parking, by eight or ten. I think we have eight, but we're trying to squeeze in a couple more. And then it will still have that sort of circular drop-off space as well. So that'll be that'll change the whole face of that space. It'll be wonderful. But not only that, it'll create a comfortable, accessible way to get upstairs. fire alarm upgrades. The floor underneath the cooler and freezer in the restaurant needs some repair, as well as the roof. So those are just life cycle replacements. The phasing, the beginning, the phasing of the preserve, and then at the for the finishing the parks bonds projects, and then we also have a mower for Naranja Park. So it's a real mower, has a wider deck, more efficient. The mower that we have out there, I'm pretty sure we bought that in 2014 when we built the first two fields. And so the strategy would be that the real mower would go there, and the one that is currently in Naranja, we're going to repurpose that out to Vistoso Trails. And with that, that concludes my presentation, and I'm open to answers. And I think, Chair Wood, I met your expectation.
Anybody have any questions for Christy? Seeing none. Director's report? Is that already kind of in that, or you got a separate?
Okay, so just, oh, I guess that doesn't really matter. Okay, oh, there we go. Thank you. I have a few things to report for the director's report. So in terms of programming, as I mentioned, some fun new things that are happening out at Steam Pump Ranch. We're actually offering a family camping night out there, and so we have 30 spots. 29 have already been taken, and so families will set up camp. We're going to make hot dogs for them. We'll have some storytelling, watching a movie, and then making some pancakes in the morning, and it's just going to be it's going to be a blast. We're going to have a fun time out there. The other new program that's been pretty popular is the Parents Night Out. So we take up to 20 kids, and parents drop them off so they can have a date night. And we give kids snacks. We just sugar them up. No, we give them snacks. We play games. We do arts and crafts and show a movie. And then the parents come back around 9 o'clock, pick them up, and it's just, and it's a like I said, it's already sold out. And we already have people signed up for the June and July. So clearly there's a need for parents to get out. And then in terms of senior programming, we have two new programs, one called the Gadget Guidance, and that really is for people to come with their iPhone or their pet tablet or a computer or whatever, and really, you know, to talk about how do I do certain things. So that's a new program. And then we also, you're going to giggle, but it's awesome, the Senior Single Mingle. And we've already had one program, and we had participants who came in and loved it and met new people. You know, they met new people, and one was new to the community, and one was recently their spouse passed away, and they just wanted, you know, a place to connect, not online. And it was terrific. So we're going to have the next one next week. Yeah, it's awesome. Outside, well, also at Steam Pump Ranch this summer, we have our STEAM camp. And so that's STEM with an A, with art. And so we have a capacity of 50 on that. And so Lin-Ann started this program maybe about 8 years ago. Seven or 8 years ago. And I remember one week we had 5 kids, and 4 of them were her grandkids. We're now up to 50 kids every week. We're at capacity. Isn't that awesome? It's great. And quite honestly, I can tell you the reason we're at that number is because we have the garage, because now we have a place for kids to go in and cool off. In years past, it was really kind of an abbreviated camp in the mornings because it was so warm. But as it relates to camp, so our steam pump is at capacity every week, all 9 weeks, at 50 kids with waiting lists. The community center, we have 130 kids every week at capacity. And at the Aquatic Center, we have a program with a maximum of 32 kids, also at capacity. And then the at Aquatic Center, we also have the Summer Family Pass, which is a great value for families to utilize the Aquatic Center. And then on Sunday, starting this Sunday, the 21st, wait, no. Yeah, this Sunday, the 21st, we will begin our $5 Sundays. So a family of up to six can come in for $5 and spend the day at the Aquatic Center. So, yeah, pretty good value. So a couple things for you to look at your calendars. So the annual Arizona Park and Recreation Association Conference is going to be held in Phoenix, actually in Glendale at the West Gate Entertainment District is where it's going to be held. It is August 22nd through 24th. If you are interested in attending in-person, virtual, volunteering, any of that, please connect with Casey. So that way we can get you registered at the discount rate, at the early bird rate, excuse me.
Can I make a note on that, Christy? You're going to be challenged for hotels. So yep. Just realize you won't be staying anywhere close to the conference. You're looking at about 30 minutes out right now. I just want you to know that. And let me know if you would like to go. Thank you.
But if you like Beyonce, she's in concert. That's why we're challenged with hotels. When the conference committee identified this date, we have all this space, we're going to have all these hotels, so now Beyonce is going to be performing at the State Farm Stadium. So anyway, kill two birds with one stone, right? And then lastly, another save the date, Tuesday, July 18th at 10 in the morning, we plan on holding a ribbon cutting ceremony recognize the completion of the barbecue bunkhouse projects. The three buildings that are in the process of being restored, our contractor should be done early July. Wanted to give a couple weeks, and so this was a good date that our council, our electeds, were also available. So, once that's all solidified and whatnot, we'll make sure to get that to you. To save your date. And so with that concludes my report.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions?
The programming has become excellent in Oro Valley as a parent, just my personal experience, and very affordable too. So I appreciate that so much. I'm a mom of four kids that has to find somewhere for all of our kids to go in the summer. Very affordable.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, so you know, Your wet blanket attorney knows that for reports like that, we generally don't have a lot of room for questions. A comment?
Oh, fine. In that case, I would, seeing no further business, I would like to make a motion to adjourn at 9 o'clock.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. I think we can probably just vote by saying bye.
Mr. Chair, it could be done by acclamation with a vote and second, or you can all decide to vote and those who are against it can stay. I'm fine.
Thanks, everybody. We're done.